You are listening to the Legacy Arts Chronicles podcast. I'm Christina Altamura. This podcast is an oral history about the master teachers that have touched our lives through their art, work, and legacies. Series 1 concentrates on the innovations of Franco Scala, an Italian master teacher who considers himself a craftsman of piano pedagogy. His Piano Academy in Imola pioneered a new collaborative teaching model called Encounters with the Masters. Through conversations with Scala and his former students and collaborators, we wanted to tell the story of this remarkable person, an artisan teacher tied to the land of his ancestors and the school he founded that has produced such phenomenal pianists. Episode number 3, The Dynamics of Movement.
If you free the mind, you can also free the body. Do you understand? But it is usually easier to do the reverse.
I started interviewing Franco Scala on September 7th, 2016. Here is our very first session. He started by telling me about the beginning of his studies with Carlo Zecchi at the Santa Cecilia Academy in Rome, and how Zecchi encouraged him to observe his assistant, the then rising star from Argentina, Fausto Zadra. Even then, Zecchi intuited that Scala possessed an acute level of observation, which allowed him to reverse engineer the technique of great pianists. Scala's ability to analyze the body and predict sound by observing how the pianist sits at the instrument is legendary. Where muscles tend to tense up at precise moments in a score, just before a difficult passage, where holding one's breath during those passages causes memory slips due to lack of oxygen to the brain, and how superfluous and incongruent motions can impede a pianist's intended sound. In fact, he actually listens to a student's intention as much as the results. He is a master artisan of understanding the body at the keyboard. Here's the story of where it all began.
Quando appunto arrivato a Roma da Zecchi, uh-huh. Mi disse che ci sentì qualche cosa, tu dovresti studiare un po' con Fausto Zadra, eccetera, che è un mio assistente.
Shortly after I had arrived at Zecchi's house in Rome, he told me, listen, you should observe my assistant Fausto Zadra to help with problems in your technique. Zecchi found my playing to be rather stiff and rigid. I was scared because this was a great teacher at a great school. I was 21 or 22 years old then. I had at that point finished a period in which I played dance music in small bands to help support my family. I regularly played in those bands until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, until I realized that this was not my path. I wanted to continue with classical music. I managed to get a scholarship for my studies from a bank in Imola and applied to study at Santa Cecilia Academy, where there were only two spots available. Vladimir Kirpan and I both auditioned and got in. He was Slavic, a very talented boy. We are still friends. So then I went to Fausto, who turned out to be very friendly. He and his wife, Marie-Louise Bastin, were only a few years older than me, and we became friends. I heard a concert of his after only 3 or 4 days at the academy. He played a Liszt sonata, and it was incredible. I had never heard it performed that way before or ever again. He brought out the sound, the structural and temporal qualities, the colors. It was all there. He also had this ease with his hands and a distinct way of utilizing his arms and fingers. He had it all.
Dico, senti, fammi una cortesia. Quando lui si deve preparare per un concerto, perché dopo diventiamo amici, mi puoi chiamare. Mm-hmm. Io mi metto a sedere vicino a lui e così lo vedo quello che fa. Mm?
Marie-Louise used to say, he never practices. I said to her, can I ask you for a favor? The next time he prepares for a concert, can you call me? I would like to sit right next to him while he practices and watch what he does. Eventually, he agreed. But at first he asked me, but what do you want out of this? I said, I have an agreement with your wife. Let me stay right here because there are things I have to learn. What I observed from watching him was that he didn't have a typical way of practicing technique. He had these special strength-building exercises for the fingers, employing his body weight. Those who do sports as a hobby today achieve about as much as professionals achieved 20 years ago. It is the same with the technical advancements of modern pianists. We don't develop technique the same way as they did in the time of Hannon or Czerny. Those exercises are still very useful, but they don't build finger and hand strength on their own. The development of the hand must not be done through speed. For example, some people would pick up a bottle with their thumb, pointer, and middle fingers, while others would wrap all of their fingers around it. The formation is completely different. For some people, their fourth and fifth fingers are like two useless stumps. It makes no sense to work on music written for 10 fingers when 4 of them are weak. Those fingers need to be strengthened, and this is what it means to form the hand. I understood how they needed to be developed by watching Zadra, because he did the exercises. Zadra's first teacher, Scaramuzza, called them martelletti, which means little hammers. And there I came up with my concept of la dinamica del movimento, a way of playing while maintaining relaxed muscles at the keyboard.
Dinamica del movimento is an approach where the choreography of the fingers, wrists, and arms emerges based solely on the shapes of note patterns and musical phrases. The movements must never be random, but always guided by the music so that economy of motion and the amount of energy expended is efficient. Dynamics are the result of these movements. This relationship between the two are a lesson in cause and effect. The basic concept is that you employ the force of gravity. When you lift the arms, wrists, and hands to varying heights, you resist gravity. Different dynamics are a consequence of releasing those muscles. Loud, soft, and every gradation in between are achieved in this very organic way. This approach allows for tremendous freedom of the larger muscle groups. If you find the right motion, you avoid the muscle contraction caused by trying to deploy a specific amount of pressure on the keys, which ultimately inhibits freedom of expression through the body. All of this is only possible when the hand and fingers are strong enough to support the weight of both the arm and the upper body. Of course, these concepts are taught at the keyboard and can only be described in words up to a point. They align natural movements with ideas in the score rather than creating a series of smaller, disjointed movements which interrupt the musical thought. In this process, each pianist learns about the tendencies and limitations of their own body. A good way to think about this is in how we choose fingerings. Scala explained to me that when he was a young student at the academy, he started to notice that many of the fingerings written in various editions of scores didn't make sense with what the music was saying. Some were geared towards the size and shape of the hand of the editor. Some interrupted the flow of the music. Others simply seemed absurd. That is when he realized that fingerings should only be decided after you understand the movements necessary to bring out the meaning of a musical phrase. Automatically accepting the editor's fingerings is a bit like buying gloves without knowing what size they are and hoping they'll fit.
Se sei rigido, prima regola, se sei rigido tu trasmetti paura al cervello. E se trasmetti paura, emotivamente il cervello non ti dà determinate cose musicalmente.
If you are stiff or rigid, your brain will register fear. If you experience fear, your brain cannot provide any other emotions for musical expression. It does not even know that you are playing the piano. It only understands that there is danger. It is evolutionary, as if we are all expecting to be hit on the head with a club. You play rigidly, as if waiting for that danger to arrive. Your muscles contract to protect the bones in the body. You must completely liberate your body from this fear. You also liberate the mind so that it can give fluidity to your musical discourse.
Invece, tu devi essere completamente libero nel corpo, liberare la mente per poter dare fluidità al tuo discorso musicale. È la prima regola. Rigidi fisicamente è una cosa che è assolutamente deleteria per poter suonare bene. Non è possibile. Se tu liberi la mente, liberi anche il corpo. Hai capito? Poi è più facile fare il contrario.
This is the first rule. A rigid body impedes and destroys the ability to play well. It's just not possible. If you free the mind, you can also free the body. Do you understand? But it is usually easier to do the reverse. If you practice for too long with stiffness, it becomes a physical habit. You may think you have resolved your problem by practicing, but when you perform in public, the fear and rigidity return. Here at the Academy, we do many practice performances before concerts or competitions. It is not easy to remove that natural tension from the body. It is not easy, because when you are practicing by yourself, emotions emerge. You are moved by something that you are playing. This is beautiful. But to be able to recreate this in public, you must overcome so many obstacles within yourself. You must feel secure in what you are doing and have a strong desire to share it with others.
Oppure c'è anche un'altra cosa. In 50 anni di didattica difficilmente ho trovato persone senza piccoli traumi o traumi.
Another step in removing the rigidity is to overcome trauma. After 50 years of teaching, I've hardly ever encountered a student without even a minor trauma. Traumas can originate from a variety of sources. They can come from obsessive parents who say, "My child must play well." Many times I have talked with parents of young students. I seek out these conversations because through the parents, I understand things about their children that I previously didn't understand. It could be the strong personality of the father has crushed the child, or that the mother is too insistent. It often happens that children are victims of their parents. And so you must wear many hats: good father, good mother, good mentor, and also understand that they are an individual. Their emotions should be validated and not dismissed. Their personality should be respected. A teacher can never pit the student against his parents. This is very important. It is dangerous to do so because the child has lived with them and defends them. Subconsciously, they think, "He is my enemy because he is against my parents." You must intervene in a way that they do not think this.
E questo è l'istinto per capire però se hai un carattere forte di quel ragazzo. Se il tuo allievo ha un carattere forte, allora deve adoperare un certo sistema. Non essere più forte di lui. No, no.
Here you need to possess an instinct for the kind of student you are dealing with. For a strong-willed talent, you must adopt a certain approach. You cannot be too forceful with them. Absolutely not. You must be flexible and convey your ideas a bit at a time. If you fight with a strong-willed person, they will fight back in the same way. This must be understood. And you can determine their personality through their playing, plain and simple. Observe how they interpret and represent the music. Students with strong personalities make mistakes with great conviction. They impose on the music as a way of saying, "This is how I play it." At that moment, you realize whether this is a strong personality or not. But the line between them is not always clear. Sometimes an insecure person can make themselves feel stronger by adopting an aggressive posture. A strong-willed talent doesn't rely on this posture, but on the conviction of their ideas. In this case, you have to think carefully about when to intervene and how to conduct yourself. You must always be in control of the lesson. You should challenge them to defend their ideas, but always with great kindness and a friendly manner. Then, gradually, they will want to understand what you mean. This is extremely important. The student must seek to understand whether what the teacher says is true for them. A strong personality does this naturally. They say to themselves, "He's making me question my ideas." Watch carefully for that moment of doubt, because at that point, you must not force it any further. Find your way to them gradually. On the other hand, the less strong personality does not question and merely follows directions. I told you about a former student who possessed a very strong personality. I helped her by assigning the Goldberg variations. She learned that she could not be presumptuous, that when confronting a masterpiece like this, we are all very small indeed. She came to understand this. Assigning difficult repertoire is a useful tool for working with a strong personality. It is also a measure of how far they can go. If their repertoire is too easy, they will fall short of their full capacity.
Recently told me that with today's advanced teaching methods, those who are less talented can also be trained to execute up to a very high level. However, if a student who possesses a unique artistic vision believes that their artistic identity is being dismantled, they will ultimately reject the teacher. Instead, this student's trust must be earned so that together they can embark on a process of mutual discovery and illumination. The teacher should also have the intelligence and experience to recognize when a student's unique artistic vision approaches something in a new way they have never heard before. They must have the humility to allow the students to invite them into a new world. Acknowledgements. Thank you to Franco Scala for his generous time and for providing us access to the Academy's faculty and students. Special thanks to the U.S. and Italy Fulbright Commission for granting me a fellowship in 1997, which allowed me to extend my time with Maestro Scala. This project is a culmination of our pedagogical work together. Music credits. Our opening theme is the Chopin Etude, Opus 25, Number 1, performed by Cristina Altamura. Excerpts from the Goldberg Variations, BWV 988, by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by Gilles Bay on the Phone label. Credits. This episode was written and edited by Cristina Altamura and Adam Slewinski. Translation team includes Adam Slewinski and Sergio Deludicibus. Voiceover by Leonard J. Altamura. Audio editing and engineering by Joseph Branciforte. Find us on Facebook at Legacy Arts International. You can listen to the Legacy Chronicles podcast, Oral Histories of Master Teachers, at Spotify, iTunes, or wherever podcasts are found.